Hello, everyone, and welcome to a live episode of the Geek Embassy. Isabella and I are at Emerald City Comic Con, and this is her first time at Emerald City.
Yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't able to come last time when you were here, so it's even bigger this time.
It's even bigger.
It's a real experience.
Well, we're recording this at the end of the con. We have some absolutely fantastic interviews that we've done, but I thought we'd start out and have Isabella share what was her favorite moment from the con.
I think just people stopping me and asking to take my picture because I've been dressed up.
Yes, Isabella did some really great cosplay. Make sure to check out the website, thegeekembassy.com. We'll post some of her pictures up there.
Yeah, I'm not special, but people want a picture with Louise and with Cora. So.
Right. Well, that's the whole joy of cosplay, right?
Yeah, it's flattering.
And watch when people walking by telling you you look great and great costume.
Yeah, and that's why I love stopping people and telling them I like their costume, too.
Yes, I agree. It's one of my favorite things to do because you can see it just lights people up when
exactly.
you do it.
Yeah,
that's great. Well, how has the con been overall for you?
Unexpectedly exhausting.
Really?
I think it's just the mass of people makes it a little bit.
There's a lot of humanity here.
For my little introvert brain, it's overloaded.
Yeah, but that's half the fun.
Yeah.
And then you get to just, you know, retreat now for a couple of weeks and just do your thing. Yeah, that's cool. Well, dear listeners, we've got some great interviews for you. I'm not going to lead into anybody. I'm just going to let you explore as you listen to this episode. Remember, this is recorded live at Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle, Washington, April 8th, 9th, and 10th. Is today the 10th? Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
I did. All right. I know what day it is.
Because I remember because I have to go back to work tomorrow.
So please enjoy our episode. All right. I'm here with Jeff Martin, who is a cartoonist. And dropping your card. It's supposed to be a live show, so it can be spontaneous, right?
Just fell off a cliff immediately.
Yeah, exactly. Let my first interview. Let's just go for it. All right, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your work, about your site, about your book, about what's going on here?
I am a cartoonist, like you said. I have been making comics full-time for 3 years now, after doing it part-time since 2005.
That must feel good, then.
I used to be a teacher.
What'd you teach?
I taught social studies in junior high.
Wow, that is the one grade level that I swore I would never teach.
Yeah, it's, they don't really tell you, but, when you get, in Canada, degrees are split between, you get an elementary degree or a secondary degree.
Right.
If you get a secondary degree, you're sort of just stuck teaching junior high, if that's what's available. Because everyone wants to teach high school, no one wants to teach junior high.
Right, yeah. It terrifies me, that age terrifies me.
They're not really people entirely.
But they really want to be.
Yeah.
But they haven't figured out how to be or what it means yet.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, how casually monstrous they are is...
They don't realize.
...is unsettling.
The power of words or actions or peer pressure, like the pressure on other people and on even as a teacher.
Yeah, and so once I started making some money from comics, I stopped doing that very quickly.
That's good.
And actually the book that allowed me to stop teaching is being used in schools now to teach the War of 1812.
And that's, I think, this one, right?
Yes, it is on the back of my card.
Yeah.
It is called Redcoats-ish, Jeff Martin's War of 1812.
Nice. So it kind of took a little bit of your experience, social studies maybe, and you worked that into your comics?
Yeah, so I'd gotten a history degree in university and had no use for that at all, and then ended up using it to teach. And then I ran into the publisher from Renegade Arts Entertainment, and he liked my art, but he didn't have any room in the schedule for something new. But he wanted something that he could put online to drive attention towards one of their books that existed already. And they had done a book called The Locksleys in the War of 1812. And seeing that got me thinking about an old script that I had done about 10 pages of and then just sort of abandoned about the War of 1812. So I went back and found the old Word document and cleaned it up, kind of tweaked some stuff, and drew a sample strip. And sort of by the end of the month, we had worked out the details for
what
the book was going to be.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, actually, my last day teaching, I drove straight from work to the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo, where I was doing my first signing to promote that the book was going to be coming out.
Right. So you went straight from your other job to your new future.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, cool. So that book sort of transitioned me into doing comics full time, but I finished it faster than the contracted length. So I was still getting paid, but I was like out of, you know, I was out of pages to draw for it.
Yeah.
But I was still getting paid, which is how my Hockey Apocalypse series came to exist.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about that one.
It is about mutants who gamble resources on hockey games in post-apocalypse Canada. Did I mention I'm from Canada?
Yeah. I kind of got
that. I don't know if I've said that enough times. But yeah, so that book existed because I'm from Edmonton, and the Edmonton Oilers have been a dumpster fire for about a decade. So I wanted a way where I could engage with hockey and not be sad at the end.
And not be hugely disappointed in outcomes.
And it turns out if I control every aspect of the outcome, it's a lot more satisfying. So I decided to work on that book while I was still collecting checks from the Renegade book.
Give you a little space between projects that way, right?
Yeah.
You kind of ramp up on the new one.
And at the time I had an artist residency at Happy Harbor Comics, which at the time that was the only artist in residence program in North America. I believe actually since then there have been other programs that have started existing. But yeah, so because I had the income from the residency and also was contractually obligated by it to be working on pages of something in the store, I came up with, well, Hockey Apocalypse had sort of been around and I pitched it to some hockey magazines and some teams, but nothing really happened with it. And then I decided to pull it back out and give myself something to do. And before too long, I had a full trade's worth. And now the third volume will be coming out about 2 weeks from when we're recording.
Cool.
For the 2016 Calgary Expo.
Awesome. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So what kind of advice, because what I'm loving about your story and your narrative here is how you've taken the things that you love and you've turned them into comics.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so the hockey, like being able to like create a hockey world that you could enjoy. What kind of advice would you give our listeners who might be interested in doing something similar as to how to follow that as their dream?
I think it's important if you're going to make something, that whether it's comics or whether it's, you know, anything, like if you want to start a podcast, if you want to write a book, if you want to make a comic or anything like that, make something that you would want to see or read or hear.
Right.
Because if you do that, you're going to put so much more
that
into
energy
it.
Comes with it, right? That appreciation you have for it.
Like if you're just trying to look at sort of trends and try and develop something fit within a market or within trends or whatever, then there's always going to be a certain level of hollowness to what you're doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it will feel more like work than if you just do something that you want to exist.
Right.
And then, because the thing is, it's sort of like the idea with comedy. If you tell a joke and, like, if you think a joke is funny, somebody else will think
that joke is
funny.
Exactly. Right.
Might not be the people you just told the joke to, but it'll be somebody.
Right. Yeah. Somebody's going to see it the way that you did.
Exactly.
Right.
So, creating stuff works the same way. If you do something that you think is cool, somebody else will think that's cool.
Right.
And then the hard part really becomes, after you've made the thing, figuring out how do I get this to the people
will think it is cool. What's the best avenue to push this out once you have it? Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great advice. Thanks for that. And so I'm wondering, what else was good? I had another question that popped in my head and now it left.
This is me vamping while you think.
Yeah.
Listen to me vamp, podcast audience. All right, that's all I got.
I had my question. Okay, so outside of your own work and the stuff that you've created, what's your favorite geekdom? Like, what's the place that you go to that you just geek out?
My instinct was to say comics, but that's probably not right. Because really, it's either wrestling or sports.
Ah, okay. And then the comics may be secondary to that.
Well, comics is, I love making them, and I love reading them.
Right.
But I also am one of those people, I have no idea what's going on in industry news, unless it involves someone that I'm friends with.
Right, yeah, I get that way too.
That's the only time I hear comics industry news. Is, oh, a book got announced by someone that I know.
But
that's
you'd be
cool.
More likely to know about wrestling and other sports.
Yeah. I have a buddy who, if I get a text message between like 11 p.m. and 4 in the morning on a Monday night, Tuesday morning, 95% of the time it is my friend Dan. And he has opinions about what he just watched on Monday Night Raw that he needed to share. So that's
where your community comes from as well.
Yeah, and yeah. I've done for 6 years now a webcomic about space wrestlers.
I saw that too as I was looking at your site. It's awesome.
Yeah, and that exists for a reason, not just because...
Right.
Yeah. Again, it's not a, well, let's look at marketing trends and see what's,
It's just your interest.
Yeah, I've watched this since I was 7.
Right.
So, that makes sense.
So I might have a little expertise here that I can. A
little bit.
Yeah. Exercise. Awesome. So where would our listeners go to find your information and to learn more about your projects?
Well, I assume this isn't coming out during the con.
No, it's going to start it'll probably be Tuesday or Wednesday next week.
Okay, so the best place to go is heat.rentathugcomics.com. That's my website. You can get to my social media and all that kind of stuff from there. Twitter is good at heatcomic. I'm also doing a comic online for heavy metal.
Oh, nice.
So that's just at heavymetal.com. It's called Where is Zog? It's almost always somewhere on the front page, so you can just scroll down and find it. Those are probably the best places to look for the stuff that I'm doing.
Awesome. Well, thanks. Thanks for coming and talking to the Geek Embassy.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Hello, everyone. I am here with Phil. You're going to have to help me with your last name. Make sure I get it right.
Folio.
Okay. It would be, easy to say, but not spelled that way, right?
It is not. There's a G smack in the middle. That is...
See my last name?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my... Yes, yeah.
So I understand.
Yep. No, it's Italian. There's a little trick. If there's a G in the middle and a vowel at the end, the G is silent.
No idea.
You're not Italian.
I am, though.
Are you?
Yes, my mother's maiden name was Locaria.
Oh, well, then she didn't teach much.
She didn't. She didn't know any of the Italian.
Fair enough.
Well, we're here today to talk a little bit about your work, and I have to say, I have just discovered Girl Genius.
Really?
Like, just this con, picked up the first book and found it, and I'm in love. So,
well, thank you very much.
I would love for you to share with our listeners some information about Girl Genius and your other books that you have.
Why, sure.
Excellent.
Girl Genius is a webcomic. It updates 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It takes place in a world where mad science is a thing. It's a trait that tends to get passed down through families. Our hero, Agatha, discovers that she is actually the long-lost heir of a very powerful family of mad scientists who everyone else thought had been safely wiped out. When they find out this is in fact not the case, everyone wants to either kill her because her family was very bad, or control her because her family was very powerful. And hilarity ensues.
Of course, yes, and lots of adventures.
That's
sure.
That's right. We used to do it as a regular comic book. We started back in 2000, actually. We started doing it as a regular comic book, and then in 2005, we said, you know, this comic book thing, this just ain't really working for us. So we put it online, all of it, online for free. We were really the first people to do that.
To do that, to make your content available.
Take
online.
An established, people right. were paying us money,
and
comic book,
free.
And just give it away for free. People right. thought we were insane.
And you weren't, of course.
Within 1 year of starting to give it away for free, our sales tripled.
Yeah. Huh. And that's a good lesson to learn. Right
there you
there.
Go. Yeah. And then once a year, we collect all the existent new pages and put out a book.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in the middle of kickstarting for book number 15.
Excellent.
Thank you.
That's amazing. So what kind of readership do you have? Who is it that tends to gravitate toward Girl Genius?
Oof. You know, that's one of the things it's really hard to say. We've got a lot of female readers. We've got a lot of young readers who, you know, we have a lot of old readers.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is because I've been in the comics business for like 40 years. So I've got this huge comet tail of
right.
people who have been following my work,
right.
and it's like if I did a book about, you know, intelligent platypuses, they'd go, all right, sure, that's funny.
Let's
stuff.
Let's do it.
Absolutely. You know.
We'll go there with you.
There you go, exactly. We're very inclusive. We tell people teens and up, which I think is a bit overly sensitive, but my wife insists on it, because there are established characters who occasionally die. There is an acknowledgement that there is, you know, an opposite sex or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, there is an attraction that could lead to something.
Right.
Occasionally, some of the characters walk around with, you know, in like Victorian underwear, which is like nothing, but
right.
it's the intent. So, and
right.
pretty much what we always say is, no doubt your child is a special snowflake.
Of course.
And, you know, any hint of any of these things would like smack them between the eyes like a meteorite from space. So you, as a responsible adult, should read it first.
Right,
and,
exactly.
You know, absolutely.
That should be the, you know, the call to all parents.
You would think.
Preview the media that you're giving your children.
Yep. we've won 3 Hugo Awards for Best Graphic Story. We were the first one to win for graphic story. It was a brand new category. We won it 3 years in a row, and in the third year, we removed ourselves from the category for a year because it was getting embarrassing.
Fantastic.
Which, since we haven't won since, may have been a grave tactical error. I know. That's where it goes. As soon as somebody else figured out, hey, wait a minute. So, but we were there.
What was your inspiration for Girl Genius? And to have the, I'm always curious, as I mentioned, my research was on women and gamers. My original research topic was going to be female superheroes.
Ah.
So I've always loved female protagonists, especially those that are imbued with some sort of magical ability. And so I'm very curious about where Agatha came from.
Well, my wife and I wanted to do something brand new. We wanted to do something with a strong female character. We both like stories about mad scientists. And it pretty much, you know, kind of snowballed from there. That was the seed, and it went from there.
Yeah. Well, it looks like it's carried quite a bit of momentum for you in terms of the seed that kind of blossomed and grew well.
It's certainly the most successful thing, you know, I've ever been associated with, aside from Magic the Gathering. But, you know, my wife and I did cards for them. You know, that I'm told that's doing pretty well.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's got its following.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
I know.
It might, you know, small.
I know.
You know,
I know.
Just worldwide, you know, tournaments.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. How, if you wanted to sort of, one of the things we're looking to do with the Geek Embassy is help people get started in geek cultures that they may not have had experience with otherwise.
Okay.
What kind of advice would you give someone who wanted to get into your comics or into maybe comics sort of in general? Like, where would you tell them to start or how to get sort of, you know, in the ground level of comic books?
Well, if you wanted to get started with Girl Genius in particular, I'd say read it. I mean, that's kind of a gimme, really. But we make it easy because you can read it online for free.
Right, and there's a link that takes you to the beginning of the story. So
yes.
I went on your site to kind of look, as I found it yesterday and I was doing my research. I was like, oh, look.
Yeah.
And I appreciated that because that's often a problem I find with webcomics, finding the beginning of the story. And I'm a stickler for the story. I have literature degrees. I have to know the story from beginning to end.
Yes. Story is very important for us. We started writing Girl Genius in 1993 and didn't start producing it until like 2001.
Wow.
We wanted to make sure that we had our story down.
Right.
There are so many books and comics that, you know, somebody comes up with a great idea and it's like, oh, hey, guess what? Everybody's really a talking cow and they don't know that, but that's what they turn into when they go to sleep. And, you know, and they put out like their first issue or their first four issues or something like that.
Right.
And people are like, wow, this is amazing. How does this story end, John? And they have no idea.
Right.
They have no idea.
They haven't conceptualized it that far.
They
right.
haven't. They never right. thought about it.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, in comics at least, this manifests as, you know, the first four issues will come out bang, 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 right on schedule, and then there's a delay,
right.
and then there's a longer delay,
yeah, and then you lose everybody in that. Lull.
That's right. Exactly.
Yes,
you know?
They find other
exactly.
things to fill
well,
in.
Well, even. There's a 50-50 chance they'll never finish the damn story.
Right. That's pretty much true of most books, right?
That is correct. That is correct.
You may not actually finish through it.
Yep.
So is that some advice you would give young writers as well?
Oh, my gosh.
Looking at, make sure you have your plan.
Right. Yes. Figure out your story.
Right.
Figure out your story. The other bits of advice I give people who want to do comics is, you know, get good lettering, because lettering is one of those things. If it's good professional lettering, like, you know, Comic Craft or something, nobody notices it.
Right, and that's what you want.
Exactly,
that's what
yes.
you want. Whereas, you want it to be seamless.
Whereas bad lettering, you know, everybody notices that.
Right, yeah. That's interesting. I never thought about that.
Many people do not.
Yeah, like
yeah.
you don't think about like how that impacts. But when you're reading a text that is a combination of image and text,
right.
You have to have they have to work together.
It's got to be
precise.
Readable. It's got to be let's see. These days, I tell everybody, for heaven's sake, start it as a webcomic.
Right.
Because.
Well, yeah.
Your costs, that's one of the reasons we went to webcomic, because, you know...
The overhead.
Sure.
Yeah.
Producing a... what we were doing is we were producing a individual comic of like 20, 30 some odd pages, and it came out like four times a year, and that cost you like $20,000. Printing and, you know, the colors and everything.
Yeah.
And... then you take those three, four issues and you put it together in a collection.
Right.
And that costs you even more money. And it's like,
Yeah. Nobody
keeps the comics. You know, they're periodical. And what that means is that periodically, your comic book store tosses them out. They're gone. They're no longer fresh. Whereas a book with an ISBN number and a barcode, it can stay on a shelf for years and years and years. Hopefully it won't. Hopefully it'll sell.
Right.
But, you know.
Now, did you have to change the format of how you created it when you went from the books, from the periodicals, to the web format?
Yes. Okay. It was interesting.
I would imagine some things would have to tweak a little bit to get it to fit the format.
It was interesting, actually. I mean, you know, it used to be you'd put out, you know, when you were doing like a 30-some-odd page book, you know, you had to get this huge chunk of work out and then boom, you know, there's big cathartic printing thing.
Right.
Doom. Whereas with the, you know, and there's this huge deadline and you got to meet it and you got to...
It's looming over you and your whole life is about it.
Exactly,
yes.
Right.
I remember I wrote a dissertation. I know what you're talking about.
There you go. Whereas with webcomics, it's, at least for me, it's a lot easier. I mean, one, you know, instead of a giant, massive deadline that I'm facing down like every 3 months, I've got a deadline that's like every other day.
Right.
Whereas
right.
I only have to get one page out.
But it becomes part of your regular life that
it
way.
It does. Right. It's very cyclical.
It's just fabricated.
You know,
life, right?
And I figured out that, you know, I was producing more pages per year.
Right.
By doing it this simpler...
Smaller.
Yeah, exactly.
It becomes more in the end, right?
It does.
Did that change your creative process at all?
Yes, I think it did.
Thanks a lot.
Very early on, I realized that with webcomics, webcomics in some ways are like television. And what I mean by that is... People are just, on television, people are always just sitting there flicking channels trying to find something interesting.
Right, boom. Something that catches their attention.
Exactly, and web comics are kind of the similar in that, you know, they may have heard of it, and they'll go, oh, let's see, Girl Genius, all right, what the heck is this? You know, girlgeniusonline.com, click, oh. So, basically, you got one shot.
Right.
One shot to engage their interest.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much true of all web content.
It is. So, every single page, you should have a joke or an interesting cliffhanger or, you know, nice-looking young people with little clothing. You know?
Never hurts.
No. Something that makes you go... Oh, this is amusing.
Oh, okay.
This catches my attention.
Right.
Whereas back when we were just doing them as stories, I wasn't really as focused on that. So, you know, there would be joke arcs, but there wouldn't be any payoff sometimes for like a couple of pages.
Right.
Yeah. There you go.
The buildup was different. So you're looking at a different pacing of building up.
Exactly.
To the punch, yeah.
So this time I'm aware of several different rhythms in the work.
Right.
You try and have some sort of payoff, you know, ideally a joke every day.
Right.
You can't always.
Right.
You know, a
or
joke or something.
Moment
exactly.
Or something that pulls on you that you're like, I need to see what happens tomorrow.
Right.
What happened today.
It's always nice if there's some sort of minor arc that goes from Monday to Friday. You know, because there's nothing I like better than giving people a cliffhanger that will bring them back Monday,
right, exactly.
There
you
go.
Have them all in the weekend where you can
That's
keep them
right.
coming back
you know, if
Monday.
If I can have a sword screaming down toward our heroine's head Friday afternoon, you know, the screaming helps me sleep all weekend long. You know.
That's
and then, of
quote.
Course, there's the There's the greater story cycle. You try and have a, you know, a story arc that's kind of a beginning, middle, and end that ends in each volume,
right,
which
right.
takes about a year. And of course, that's all part of this greater story arc that we've been working on for 15 years.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you'd have to have that.
Exactly.
Yeah, the umbrella story
right.
that the volumes are sort of fitting into.
Yep, yep.
Yeah. God, that's got to take an amazing amount of planning.
Yes, I said 7 years
yes.
before we did
yeah,
thing one.
Before you started.
There
yeah,
you go.
I can see where the payoff would be in that, taking the time so
yeah.
you can work out where
so all we
headed.
Have to do is have a ending that's worth 26 years of effort. No pressure, you know.
No pressure at all.
Tolkien did it in 10.
I know. You just can't compare. You can't compare. You have to put certain people on a shelf.
I know.
They had their abilities. And you don't go there.
Nope.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting into Girl Genius and introducing our listeners to it.
Oh, well.
My question for the con for everybody I'm interviewing today is, outside of your own work,
yeah.
what is your favorite geekdom? Where do you go and geek out?
Ooh. Wow. I read a lot of webcomics. My wife and I are very fond of anime.
Oh.
Oh, my gosh.
Interesting.
Yeah. Kaya is very much into anime and manga. She's, like, learning Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. And she's always... And we both like gaming. You
what
know.
What kind of
gaming? Mostly video stuff.
Uh-huh.
She's saved Hyrule like a dozen times. So, and do they ever write and thank her? No, they do not.
They really should.
They should.
They really should.
I know.
We'll have to talk to somebody about that.
Yeah. We both think that Okami was the best game ever made. Personally, you know, like, she likes World of Warcraft. Oh my God, she does that a lot.
Uh-huh. That's what I used to play. That's what inspired my dissertation.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because I was looking at identity in gaming. So I was looking at how people went and created their online characters.
Yep.
And whether or not they were.
Well, she's got
themselves.
A whole stable pool of characters that she runs.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Stable.
Well. You
Those
know.
People are called Aldaholics.
Oh, really? I see. That's what you are, dear. I just wanted you to know that.
We
there's
wondered.
A scientific
neuro term
for that. Personally, I like shooty explodey games. I'm a big fan of Borderlands.
Oh, I love Borderlands.
Oh,
oh,
awesome!
Borderlands
yes,
is one of my favorites.
Yep. I like sniping.
Yes. Yeah, I played Zero.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I just finished up Witcher 3.
Oh.
That was just a beautiful game. Oh, my
yeah,
God. I can't wait.
I haven't played the Witcher series, but
yep,
that's what
yep.
I hear about
But,
them.
You know, I like Dragon Age and that kind of thing. You know, a game that I go, you know, I unwrap the box and I go, all right, my
right.
next couple of months set.
I got it, yes.
No social interaction necessary.
Right.
I'm just ready.
My world is eclipsed.
There you go.
Awesome.
You know.
That's fantastic. So where can our listeners learn more about Girl Genius and any other work you want to share with them?
Ooh. Well, let's see. The easiest thing to do is to go online and Google Girl Genius. We're like the first 10 things that'll come up.
Always a good sign.
Many fine bookstores and comic book shops carry Girl Genius. And if they don't, then just pretty much slap the clerk and walk out.
Harass them until they do.
Absolutely.
Yes,
they
yes.
expect it and they deserve it.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, it's on Amazon, The Great Satan. But
I know, it's funny how that changed.
I know.
It used to be the independent, now it's the big guy.
I know,
so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will say they move a lot of copies of Girl Genius, so, you know,
yes.
I'll kiss the devil. There you go.
No kidding.
Yeah. We try and make it, you know, if you want to just read it in PDF form, you know, download it. You can go. There's a place called Drive Through Comics that just sells PDFs.
Oh.
They also sell PDF versions of games.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and they're called Drive Through Games.
Uh-huh, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I'll have to check that out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, they're awesome.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly easy to find, you know, my Wikipedia entry is huge.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, this was great.
For coming up and
sure,
talking to
us
for the Geek Embassy. We really appreciate
it. All right. We must do it again sometime.
Yes, we should.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, I am here now with Brian Wolf, who's going to talk to us a little bit about his game, Tiny Swords. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, great to be here, Regina.
So why don't you give us just an introduction about your project, about Tiny Swords, and what you're doing here.
Sure thing. So Tiny Swords was a game that I originally began as a print-and-play game last year. I kickstarted, and now I'm actually selling the actual game. And so what it is, it's at its core a micro game. It's a twist on Rock, Paper, Scissors, where players fight tiny lightning-fast duels with tiny swords. So I designed about 20 different swords for this game, and each of them are based off of, there's a sweet sword, it's based off of desserts, there's a moon sword based on stars, there's lucky, spooky, there's a weenie charm based on hot dogs if you like hot dogs. And each one of those comes with a unique blade, a hilt, and a charm. So in the core game, these extra cards, you can use them as extra rock, paper, and scissors in the game mechanics, and every sword comes with a unique charm that changes how the game is played.
Now, do you have to play each of those, like, as a set? So, like, do you play the sweet set, or do you, like, intermix them?
Not at all. You can play with any set that you like.
Awesome.
As long as you have a blade, a hilt, and a charm, you can mix and match any of those themes that you like.
That's awesome. So what was your inspiration for this game and for, like, the style of gameplay?
So there was a lot of little things. It's, you know, it's one of those creative things where it's kind of a lot of things coming together all at once. It was definitely, I was coming back from a game night. We had actually been talking with some friends about Magic the Gathering, because that's a game that I've kind of gone in and out with, because there's a lot of things I really like about Magic, and what really appealed to me about it was the personality of decks. Like, getting to see...
Absolutely, like the way people play those different
yes.
decks, right? And their
exactly.
personality emerges as you're playing them.
Exactly.
Yes, I noticed that too.
And even just looking at the cards, you can get a sense, you know, that each color has kind of this...
Yeah,
there's a whole philosophy to it,
yeah,
which
absolutely.
I found really fascinating, and I love the idea of trying to basically find a game that could replicate that same level of personalization kind of on a micro scale. Because I've been interested in game design. I normally do comics is the thing, but I always enjoy branching off into different media. And so at the same time, too, like, I was really interested in this kind of, like, super personalized micro game idea. And I'm trying to think. So there was some other things. Like, I was reading a comic by a guy named Corey Ray Lewis named Dream Skills, which is this wonderfully goofy story about a future where everybody becomes impervious to bullets. So everybody just has sword fights. And now, and the character in the game, in the story, has this wonderfully customized sword that has, like, a Wi-Fi hotspot and a lighter and all these, you know, it's the same idea where the sword
right.
is an extension of themselves, but in
right.
this very modern, fun way.
Right.
So that was kind
right.
of an idea.
Right.
It was kind of that, and I'd seen some other, like, micro fighting games on Kickstarter, so mm-hmm. I kind of thought, well, why don't I just make one of my own?
Right, yeah.
And so that night, actually, while I was sitting down to dinner, I had some rough ideas based on some game mechanics I'd seen that I really liked and
right.
wanted to kind of tweak them on my own. So I literally wrote the game rules on Twitter just all in one night.
On Twitter, even?
Yes.
So you just, like, went and tweeted, like, as you were kind of coming up with it.
Exactly.
Wow.
That's a thing I've been really enjoying is uh-huh. I love being online because I love getting that instant feedback.
Yeah,
I love
sure.
talking with people mm-hmm. about what I'm doing. So I was able to go, hey, guys, I have this really, literally the first tweet I ever was like, I really want to make a tiny card game about tiny duels with tiny swords. Literally the first thing, just like giant all caps.
Right.
And so right as I sat down, I was like, okay, well, how would that work? Well,
right.
and so, like, just over an hour or so, I had a really rough idea of, like, the basic mechanics. I, like, doodled some of these cute swords because I really enjoy cute things, and I think that there aren't nearly enough card games out there that really emphasize that kind of that cute look.
Right. Well, that's one of the aesthetic things I love about what you've shown me with the game, and just picking up your card, your business card, I was like, oh, yay.
Oh, thank you.
Just the colors and the approach of the style I really thought was unique and engaging. So
thank
good
you.
Work with that. I was going to ask you about that. Like, you don't see card games with these colors very often.
It's very true, and a lot of it is a thing, like, I've been very invested in games and comics, and there's a lot of overlap between those, and I think kind of a similar problem is that, you know, if I'm being honest, it's because a lot of the stuff that I like, a lot of the colors that I chose, they're feminine things, and femininity is not a thing necessarily that gets shown or respected nearly enough within geek culture and within those kinds of things, and it's a shame because, like, most of my favorite things growing up were those things. Like, I grew up on Sailor Moon, I grew up on women comic artists, like, I grew up like Dylan McConis, Erica Moen, who like I got to intern for, and just all these like wonderful people who are making these wonderful things and doing things that are very outside of kind of this typical, very masculine or gender neutral kind of thing.
Right.
And so I wanted to make more games that kind of imbued that sort of thing. Yeah. So I mean, with Tiny Swords, you know, a lot of it was drawing from these like really vibrant pastel colors, drawing from these like little, really bright, lovely colors from like from collectible card games and like but like from stickers and from like. Like I really have a love for like designer toys, so there's a lot of that comes from Tiny Swords, where I wanted to make these as things like the swords should be, they should feel like toys.
Right.
Like I wanted it to be a thing where like these aren't going to be things that like you're using to like harm somebody. They're playful.
Right. Right. Yeah. They give you that sense of engagement and play and fun. But it's interesting because just looking at the sample, because we played right before we recorded this, looking at the. How quick the game plays, but how much sophistication can be in the game with the combinations of the swords and all those kinds and charms and all and hilt and all that. You kind of can play with it. I love games that give me, you know, it's my RPG background, right?
Like, oh,
right.
Yeah.
You have that as a background. You want to go into a game and be able to personalize it like that. And so I like that it gives you that flexibility.
Exactly. Those are the kinds of games I like the most. I love games that allow you to customize your characters. I love things that allow you to do that. And it's a thing too where so actually related to this is actually one of my favorite video games right now. Have you heard of Splatoon?
I have heard of it.
Okay, so that's another one that has this really vibrant, poppy, colorful style. It's really wonderful, too, because what it is in the game is that you actually get these wonderful street fashion styles that you can build on, because the team that made this also made the Animal Crossing games.
Okay.
So
oh,
it has a
Animal
similar
Crossing.
Thing. Right, and that's and even the thing that I love the most, honestly, about the recent Animal Crossing games is they made a lot of strides to the point, like, in that, in Splatoon, and a lot of other Nintendo stuff, they made a thing where they don't have any gender restrictions on the clothing that you wear.
Right, yeah.
So, like, if you want to, like, mix and match, like, they have nothing stopping like a male presenting character in Animal Crossing, for example, for wearing a dress.
Right.
Same thing with Splatoon, and it's this thing where the clothes in Splatoon, for example, give you a little bit of boost during the game, but really a lot of it is about like the customization. You are picking the clothes that like really matter to you.
Right.
And that's exactly the kind of thing that I would love to see in games as well.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Where you don't have to have... I've never understood that, actually. My dissertation research was about women gamers.
Really?
So I have a PhD in game studies. So one of the things that I was looking at was whether or not women performed what I called cyber drag. Would female gamers play male avatars? And what I found was that not very many do.
Hmm.
And but it's interesting because so many men end up playing female characters. And it's like a joke, right?
Interesting.
About like how many men in like World of Warcraft play female characters. And there's lots of different motivations and lots of different reasons they give for it. But what ended up happening, I think, with most of the women was they wanted to be able to present themselves in some aspect of the game. So they kept a matching gender for that reason. And men didn't feel like they had that.
It's interesting.
Tie.
If I may, that's actually a thing I've been thinking about this for a while, actually, because, like, this is a thing that I definitely identify with. For example, like, I really enjoy playing as female characters in video games for a lot of those similar reasons.
Right.
And a lot of it is I think a lot of it is due to the fact that the customization options for female characters, the clothing palettes, et cetera, they're things that appeal to me a lot more than the options available for male characters.
Right.
And I think that is a big difference. And that's actually something I've been kind of trying to be conscious of with Tiny Swords. So, for example, like, on the box, I designed a bunch of characters to go with the Tiny Swords. I designed... are you familiar with the Gijinka?
No.
As a concept, they're basically just personifications of things. So a lot of people enjoy making personifications of, say, like operating systems or Pokemon or anything
Sure.
But these are basically personifications of the swords. So I wanted to make cute little characters like that. But I wanted it to be a thing where I did want some male characters. I did want majority female characters because I feel like we need more of those anyway. But I wanted the male characters to feel as cute and adorable and comfortable with that kind of thing as possible.
Right. Yeah.
So I wanted a thing where, yes, this is a bright pink and blue box. It has lovely pastel characters, but it also has a boy character on the side of it as well, as a boy character and a girl character on each side, because I want it to be a thing. I want to emphasize
inclusive.
That...
inclusive.
Exactly.
Right, right.
It's a thing that nobody should feel bad about liking.
Well, exactly. And that's exactly what I wanted to kind of, when I started doing the research and when I started looking at cyber drag, that was, my motivation was to find out why you would make the different choices.
Mm.
And it was interesting because one of the stories that one of the participants told in my dissertation was she didn't play male characters because she never spoke on voice chat because she didn't like to be a woman, didn't like anybody to know that she was a woman, but she would text chat and everybody thought she was gay.
Interesting.
Because of the tone of her voice in her text. So they wouldn't make the connection that it was a woman playing a male character.
That is.
But instead, they would jump to the sexuality. I always thought it was fascinating.
That's fascinating, just kind of taking it on face value that, oh, of course, it's a male character.
Of course, it's got to be a male player.
Yeah, that's...
It can't not be a male player.
That is fascinating.
And another woman who had played as a male toon in a guild for a long time, and one of her guildies didn't know she was a woman, and then finally was revealed. And he's like, but I swore in front of you. Like, you know, like, you don't do that in front of women. Like,
I guess.
I mean, you know, it wasn't. I mean, that might not be a commonly held thing, but for him, it was profoundly, like, life-changing that he had been swearing in front of her, not knowing that she was a woman.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting the way. So that kind of, I think, kind of lines up with some of what you were thinking of as you were maybe
certainly
designing this. Yeah.
And it's interesting because I've had a similar opposite experience. So, for example, on DeviantArt, before I switched over to using, like, my actual name, which I thought was a little bit easier, I went by Amanita Zest, which is my old Twitter handle, etc.
Oh, yeah, saw that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was the thing where I just really wanted something that kind of sounded quirky and interesting. But it was a thing for a long time because I was using that username, and because I never posted any pictures of myself, like, based on the art, people thought that I was a girl.
Right.
So people actually thought I was female just because of, like, the art that I was presenting.
Right, right, right. Yeah, well, it's interesting. And I would think that from your game, you know? And what? Who cares? Like, it doesn't really matter you know, the gender of the person who designed the game is. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that you do, like, make those assumptions. And it's good that we have people like you who make these games, who step out of the I have to be super masculine because I'm doing this, you know, whatever. Not that anybody actually feels that way. But.
Well, no, but like I said, it's a thing that it's a very common trend in games and comics.
Absolutely.
And it's a thing, and it's a thing that is changing. And I think a lot of it is the fact that, like, there's so many women in there now who are getting the kinds of credibility and respect that,
exactly,
frankly, are overdue.
Right. Yeah.
But that's the thing that I really hope changes, and I want it to be a thing where everybody should be able to enjoy the things that they want.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, more power to you, and I hope that this is successful for that. Let's see, I have a couple of, like, sort of standard questions I'm asking someone. So if someone wanted to get started to do a similar kind of Kickstarter or wanted to do a Kickstarter, what advice would you give them to get started in that?
So if they were wanting to start a Kickstarter for something they'd already made?
Yeah.
So first off, one of the best things that I would recommend is, so Spike Trotman, if you're familiar with her. So if you've heard of Iron Circus Press or the Smut Peddler books?
Mm-hmm.
So she is, all right, so I would highly recommend
Starter.
Checking out, so
okay.
Spike Trotman, she's an incredibly successful publisher.
Okay.
She's actually here at Emerald City Comic Con.
Okay.
And she has this wonderful comic about running Kickstarters for comics. But a lot of this is stuff that can be applied to any kind of campaigns, a lot of no-nonsense information.
So just good, basic information.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really a lot of the information I was getting were from comics people, even though
sure.
I was doing a Kickstarter in another
right.
media.
Right.
Same idea.
The same basic.
Exactly.
Concept, yeah.
And that's exactly what you're doing with a Kickstarter campaign, is that you're running a business, but you're basically... You're setting up a whole campaign to
right.
Get people excited about a thing that you've made. You're making a promise. And so it's one of the things where, you know, I spent about 2.5 months just on the campaign alone, not
right.
even working on the game,
right.
just because I needed to figure out every single thing. And this was just the game and some little accessories. And, you know, I didn't want to go overboard. I didn't want to have any, like, physical stretch goals.
Right.
So starting small would also be my recommendation.
Right.
You know, whether that is, like, a single book or it's, like, a small project that you can finish in a couple months, you know, just
not to get
developing
yourself overwhelmed
those skills.
And yeah,
exactly,
like, keep the schedule in mind.
Exactly, like,
yeah.
making the thing takes a certain set of skills, and
right.
then doing the Kickstarter is a whole new set of skills to
right.
learn.
Right, cool, that's great. And my other question is, so what's your favorite geekdom? Like, where do you geek out the most?
Ooh, that is a tough choice. Oh my gosh. It really does depend, because it's a thing where I grew up with comics, I grew up with manga, I grew up with anime, games, tabletop games. The thing that I am geeking out the most about right now has been, oh goodness, it's really been all over the place, goodness. It's so hard to choose, but if I had to just talk about some specific things that I was geeking out about, Splatoon is definitely something I've been obsessing over. I picked it up right after the Kickstarter campaign, and I basically played it for like 2.5 months while I was just recovering from running that.
Right.
Undertale is probably one of my favorite video games. We Know the Devil is actually something that really touched me deeply. We Know the Devil, it's this wonderful, short, surreal visual novel, if you're familiar with the format.
Yeah.
But about these three kids at a Christian summer camp. But it's this very surreal setting. They're using radios made of crystals as a weapon to fight the devil. And it's really this like wonderful thing that's just beautiful and compact and really emotionally stirring. Like, just like, I had to sit with it in the same way like a lot of people talked about, like, sitting with Undertale and how that like emotionally affected them.
Right,
exactly, it was the same kind of feelings for me, even after playing both of those games, which is fascinating for something that I was able to play in a single night.
Cool, very cool, excellent. Well, we'll have to check those out. I'll have to look some of those up. So where can our listeners find you?
Sure. So if you like me talking about game design and anything else that's on my mind, you can find me on Twitter at AmanitaZest. If you like seeing my arts, you just want the pretty pictures, my Tumblr is briandanielwolf.tumblr.com. And if you want to buy the things that I make, I just set up a Big Cartel shop. So that's, let's see, is that brianwolf.big? Yes, brianwolf.bigcartel.com.
Nice.
And I'll hopefully have some other news about some other exciting things for people who like the stuff that I'm making.
Excellent.
I'm actually prototyping my next game, so I'm actually doing some playtest hopefully this weekend. Even.
Oh, fantastic. Where will you be doing that?
So I'm working that out right now. This may be more of a private playtest thing, but I've been talking a little bit about it on Twitter, because I'm kind of in that transition of delivering this game to backers and kind of setting up the things, but I'm very, very excited about it.
It's a next project.
Very excited about that.
Very cool. Excellent. Well, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having me here.
Pleasure. So here we are, the Geek Embassy at Emerald City Comic Con, and Eric, I don't remember your last name.
My name is Eric Fell.
Eric Fell.
Yes, and I don't remember your first name.
Regina.
Regina?
Yes, Regina.
Welcome to Geek Embassy.
Thank you.
How are you enjoying the con so far?
The con's been great. Yeah, I've been having a great time. We've done some good interviews. We're having a good time.
Oh, who's the most famous person you interviewed?
Phil Folio, who apparently has 40 years experience in the comic industry.
Wow.
And does a comic called Girl Genius.
Oh, cool.
Is well enough known so that while he was here at our table being interviewed, people were stopping to watch us be interviewed.
Oh, wow,
enough
that's very
so
cool.
That they knew who, and coming up and shaking his hand and like, yeah. So a little, you know, I just learned who he was this con. He does a comic called Girl Genius, and I'm really excited to go home and read some of it.
That sounds very cool.
Now that I found it.
I've only bought one comic so far at the con. I bought a collected edition of Lumberjanes.
Oh, nice.
Because I heard it's fantastic.
Yes. My co-host Rhonda is a huge fan of Lumberjanes.
Oh, good, good.
She loves them. And Isabella loves them as well. So
excellent.
I think that was a good choice. Very good choice.
I'm having a fantastic time at the con.
Good.
I think I'm having an even better time than I did last year.
That's good. It's nice if you can kind of up it.
Yeah. Well, I get to get in on a pro pass now, so I didn't have to pay.
Yeah,
which
that's always nice.
Probably helps the experience. I can spend
like,
it
let
on.
Let me up this a little bit.
Yeah, they have mystery boxes here.
I saw that.
There's
40
some
bucks,
yeah,
right?
There's some mystery boxes in the shape of like the question mark Nintendo things.
Right, yeah.
Oh, I forget the name.
And Mario.
Yeah, and
like,
then there's a $65 TARDIS one, and then. There's also ones that look like Happy Meals.
I don't think
yeah, they're
Happy
kind of in a Happy
ones.
Meal box.
Oh,
they're in another part of the floor.
I saw the cube from Portal as well.
Oh.
In those.
Okay, I should check that out.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
not
I think
not
that's
well,
what I
but
thought
yes.
But yeah, a box that was the same box
the
shape, but a portal
I was
cube.
Just going to say. So
nice.
Like,
so yeah. So yeah. Have you gotten one?
I haven't.
Okay.
I'm trying to talk myself out of getting the $65 one. Most of my reasoning is, Eric, you're an actor. That's $65, and you're Canadian, so $65 US right now.
Yeah,
that's
Yeah. Well, I don't know what's in them.
There's,
like, I haven't seen. I saw someone pull out a couple of things out of one of them before I knew they were surprise boxes,
right.
And it was like a little mask and a little trinket of some kind, and I was like,
oh, $40? Wow, yeah,
$40.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was more, but at least I hope there was more.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, they said there's like the minimum $50 worth of stuff inside. It's probably going to be like 1990s action figures, all busted up.
Right.
Like the 1995 Star Wars figures.
They're still in the package, but the packages are like been chewed on by like rats or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's really good. Because like, oh, they're not rats. They're Womp Rats.
Right.
Those are Star Wars creatures. Look them up on Wikipedia. So I can sell them for more.
Right,
it's
exactly.
A special variant.
So what have your activities been while you've been here?
Well, the big one was the Critical Hit show.
That was last night, right?
Yes, last night we do a live, epic, improvised fantasy comedy inspired by tabletop gaming.
Awesome. I remember you talking about that last year.
Yeah, so this was our fourth time doing it.
That's
here.
Awesome.
We were very excited to do it. And it gets bigger every year. We had about 500 something people show up.
Nice. That's an exciting endeavor.
Yes.
Yeah. And how'd it go? Do you feel good about the performance?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, everybody was on the ball. I think the energy in the room was just so positive and so great because we do this as a monthly show in Vancouver.
Right.
The last Wednesday of every month.
Yeah.
And we do it here once a year.
Right.
And I checked, and a lot of the people that had seen it before had only seen it here at Emerald City. So this is like, they get one for the year.
Right, right.
And they were very excited to see it, and they let us know. And there's one thing I can say about con audiences, they don't hold back.
No, the enthusiasm pretty much just seeps through the entire experience of being at a con.
Oh, absolutely.
It's one of the reasons why it's a rush to be here, just in general.
Oh, yeah. And we can go a little bit deeper with our cuts in terms of referencing and jokes.
Yeah.
And they'll get it. I made a,
a
Lex Luthor stole 40 cakes joke that killed.
Well, and Desi Desire was cosplaying Lex Luthor with 40 cakes, right?
Yes. In fact, as we record this, Desi Desire is also cosplaying Lex Luthor right now.
Ah, very nice.
I ate the cakes. I'm not proud of myself, but
I will admit there have been a few that have been snuck from the podcast crews as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
From the back store.
I call it delicious shame.
Yes. I call it con food because you get to that point, like yesterday I was just like, after some of the adrenaline from the earlier interviews, I'm like, I need something that's going to continue to help me carry through the next hour.
That's the thing. If you've never been to a con and you want to go to a con, hydrate yourself. Bring water. Bring hand sanitizer. Bring food, because the food here is pretty expensive at conventions.
Yes.
That's just, you know, the way of things.
Yep.
Also, some sort of deodorant.
That you could potentially reapply during the day.
Oh, yeah.
If this is something that you might have had previous bad experience with.
Oh,
because
yes.
There have been a couple of moments when I was like...
Oh, yeah. But here's a tip. Here's an actor's tip. If your deodorant cuts out on you and you don't have access to deodorant, but you have access to hand sanitizer, apply the hand sanitizer because that kills the bacteria that creates the odor.
Oh,
of course,
there you go.
If you've just recently shaved your armpits...
that might be a slightly unpleasant risk experience.
But
you won't be putting people off. True.
But it's a good tip. That's one of those actor's tips. When I do 3 gigs in a night and I forget my deodorant, it's like, wow, my deodorant quit on me halfway through the second show.
Yeah, let's fix this. Yeah. Oh, that's good to know. I'm gonna remember that one. Yeah. So what's been your favorite moment so far, Con?
My favorite moment at the convention was, well, during the Critical Hit show, we bring out audience members to be monsters. So I had these monsters, I called them kobold cos raiders. So they were kobolds, but they were in disguise. So basically I was bringing out cosplayers and then giving them little lizard helmets and swords. There was a person way in the back that was dressed kind of like a clown, and I'm like, oh, let's bring this guy
comics?
Up.
Right.
I said, hey, come on up.
Read comics?
Yeah.
And as he was walking down the aisle, I heard
the
audience give these, like, kind of terrified laughs.
Sometimes.
And as he was getting closer, I realized that he was completely done up like Pennywise the Clown.
I was going to say, it was going to have to be Pennywise.
To the point where he had
Marvel's
a silicone
DC's
mask on,
they all get their individual
changing his features. to look like Pennywise. And as he was walking up, I just turned to the other cast and I said, I've made a huge mistake. And the show kind of stopped for about 30 seconds as everybody was drinking in his magnificence. It was amazing. Which is
awesome.
That was a pretty good moment of the con. Yeah. And any time, because I was the first day when Desi was walking around as Lex with the 40 cakes, watching the people get it.
Right.
Like people like, okay, Lex Luthor.
Right.
Oh my God, you've got the 40 cakes.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
It was that second, oh my God, I get it. Yeah, right. That was so specific and so hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd probably say those are my favorite moments.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Those are good stories. Yeah, that's awesome.
How about you?
Oh, my favorite moments have been interviewing Phil Folio.
Right.
Partially because I had no idea he was a big deal.
Right.
Until he got up here, and then I was like, okay, this is a little, I need to be a little more on here.
Yeah.
Than I was prepared for, so that's been good. Talking to people about the Geek Embassy, which is our new site,
yes,
has been really exciting.
Tell me about that.
So, well, the basic idea for the Geek Embassy is a reading place for people who are new to geek culture.
Oh, nice.
So what we want to do is make help people get involved in geek culture, because there's often kind of that prohibitive, people expect you to have an exhaustive knowledge. People expect you to know those 40 cakes to be a fan.
Yeah, and right? And that's like a sports, this is something that really gets on my nerves. Because if you like something, you don't have to know everything about
exactly.
it. If I see someone walking down the street with a Seattle Seahawks jersey on, or just a Seattle Seahawks t-shirt, and they don't know,
every nuance of the sport.
Yeah, if they don't know, so what year was that team founded?
Right.
Oh, you don't know?
Right, exactly.
Well, you shouldn't be wearing that shirt.
Exactly. You're not a true fan, or you're not a true geek. And so that whole idea, and it's been pretty prevalent, and the culture's become kind of toxic.
Absolutely.
And so I really want it to be a place where we can have experts introduce people to the culture in a welcoming way.
Here's how I feel about it. I find a lot of that is from the fact that, here's a thing that I like, and now I'm not going to look at anything else.
Right, exactly.
And they're not peeking their head around the corner to see all these other interesting, wonderful things.
There's other stuff you could be doing.
Which is interesting, because the things that these people with tunnel vision are enjoying are made by people who look around the corner and see what else is going on.
Exactly.
And it's also about characters who look around the corner and see what else is going on.
And who make that, something bigger than
it's like, why don't you try to be like the character? Like, when I get in, I'm not going to lie to you. I've been in a few Twitter arguments.
Well, who hasn't to some degree?
And, all the, because I love Superman, and I love the ideals for where Superman stands, and I'm totally going to stay away from Batman versus Superman because it just looks like nihilistic.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah.
Draw for me is that Wonder Woman is in it. That's
yeah, and she's getting her whole own movie later on.
Yeah. Which looks great, I think I might wait.
But, the whole... When I saw Man of Steel, I was very saddened because I thought, Superman.
Right, exactly.
Pa Kent is like, maybe you should have let some kids die. I'm going to go walk into a tornado. And then Superman, kills people. I'm just like, no, that's not it for me.
Yeah.
And when I get into the arguments, I'm like, there's people that are swearing at me, calling me names and stuff. It's like, I'm a real Superman fan and you're this. And I'm like,
compromised in some way.
Yeah, and I'm like, so you're a Superman fan.
Right.
You're a fan of this character who stands for hope, who stands for inspiration. And you're at home swearing at me on the internet.
Right. Yes.
How can you,
how do you do this?
Yeah. Or the Star Wars fans who call themselves fans and then crap all over Star Wars. Like, then how can you call yourself a fan if you don't even like it?
Right, exactly.
And it really sucks because I know people who don't want to watch Doctor Who because of some of the toxic Doctor Who stuff that's been happening.
Right. And it's the same. That's a fandom I know very little about. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had an introduction to it. And I feel much the same way about comics. Like, I have very small snippet of information about certain comics, but I don't and sometimes it's hard to come to this con because so much of the references are comics. I don't know. So that's kind of the part of the inspiration for this as our new site.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. That is great. And I think web comics are a great way to get into comics.
Yeah.
Watch this segue. I have a web comic.
I love it.
It is the Critical Hit Show web comic. It is based on the Critical Hit show. It's at criticalhitcomic.com.
Nice.
And it's written by me. We've got Ian Boothby writing a script. He's the head writer for Simpsons and Futurama comics.
Okay, I'm like, I know that name.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
He does stuff for Bongo, and he's one of the performers in the show too. Yeah. So he's gonna be writing a couple scripts. I'm gonna be writing a couple scripts, and it's drawn by Heather Gilbraith, who is a fantastic artist who was a fan of the show. And I just said, you know, I'm thinking of doing a webcomic. And then all of a sudden in my email, I get drawings of the characters.
Nice.
And I'm just like, well, now I have to do it.
But that's good, because that's a nice crossover for you with
live
show and having a web presence with it. Because I think I remember asking you last year if there was some way people could get to it, and there wasn't. So now there is.
Well, there's that, and then we've got another thing going on called Dragon Punchers.
Dragon Punchers.
Yes.
I like the name.
I've teamed up with Curtis Weeb, the creator of Rat Queens, who's also a Vancouver person. And on his Twitch channel, I GM a live streaming game in the world of the Critical Hit show. And we've got some of the performers from Critical Hit show. We've got Shannon from D20 Babes, who's also in there. And we've got some other people who are going to pop in who are very, very cool Vancouver comedians. And it's called Dragon Punchers, and it's on Twitch.tv/D20Babe.
Okay.
So it's on the D20 Babe channel, and it's every other Sunday. So
awesome.
The 17th, April 17th is our next one. And if you're listening to this after April 17th, just count 2 weeks at a time. You'll get to know. They're up on their YouTube channel and everything, and it's so much fun.
Watch. Awesome.
But it is nice because people are like, where can I see this?
Right.
The YouTube thing, within 24 hours of it going up, got like 500 views,
nice.
Which is about,
you gotta love when that happens.
It's about twice the size of our Critical Hit show audience. We have about 250 show up to our regular show.
Nice. Cool. Very good. Well, it's been a pleasure to get a chance to talk to you again.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And we'll look for your comics.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
On the internet.
On the internet. Thank you so much for listening to our Geek Embassy episode at Emerald City Comic Con. We'd love to recommend this as a fantastic con if you're local. If you're not, it's still a fun one to fly in for and enjoy. I'd like to give a special thank you to the TMG cast, the Mean Geek, Adrian, and Andrew Colstead Photography, who did a bunch of pictures for us.
Yes. They're awesome.
Yeah, so make sure to check those guys out if you haven't checked them out. We shared a booth with them this year. Again, this is the second year we've been here with them, and hopefully we'll be doing this again next year, too. So check them out, check us out, and until next time, get your geek on.